It is. Good morning and welcome everyone. Today is Tuesday, May 16, 2017. This is the Josephine County Board of Commissioners convening for a general discussion. Full board in attendance. Number one is Zinke, signed order to expand access to public lands. And we have a BLM representative. Mm-hmm. If you wouldn't mind introducing yourself for the record.
Sure. Good morning. My name is Elizabeth Burkhardt, and I'm the district manager for the Medford District Office, which covers Jackson and Josephine counties and portions of Douglas and Coos County.
Awesome.
Yeah. So you've been here for about 5 months?
Yeah, 9 months, actually.
9 months?
9 whole months, yeah.
Okay.
I'm like...
Yeah, I was trying. I remember when it was 3.
I know.
It's got to be more than that.
The shine has worn off.
Yeah.
So,
are you an Oregon native? Or
I'm not. I actually grew up in St. Louis, Missouri.
Oh,
and
wow.
Yeah.
The Arch.
Yes.
Cool.
My family is from there and is still there. So, my last spot was Cedar City, Utah for 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, congratulations.
Salt Lake?
It's not. It's,
perfect.
Yeah.
She answered everything I want to know.
Not anywhere close to it.
Yeah, all of the DMs are new in the state of Oregon, including the state director.
Mm-hmm.
And another interesting fact is they're all female. Including the state director.
That's really cool.
Jose Linares.
Oh, we
is North.
Jose.
Okay.
That's great.
Okay, fellas.
Somebody
that.
Said.
Somebody
said they were all female.
It was for a little
okay.
bit. Yeah,
okay.
There was a moment where.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
So.
Well, and Jose had to go. I like Jose. So.
Yes.
There you go.
So now it's pretty. We're pretty well open, and we're not offending anybody when they say, "Oh, that's woman's work."
You know, they started calling us the Bureau of Lady Managers in different
countries. My God.
Wow.
With different meanings behind it, but I wear it with pride some days.
See,
so.
Awesome. Brilliant.
Yep.
My former housemate worked at BLM for several years here in Grants Pass, and mm-hmm. I learned more lingo about subculture and all this other kind of stuff than I ever would have thought being... Never had been a forester, so.
Yeah.
But I found that your employees have a lot of passion for
yes,
their work.
They do. They do. They're very, very dedicated. It's been my, impression throughout my career, but especially here, people take a lot of pride. The forestry program in Oregon is very unique, and so the folks who work in it take a lot of pride in that. So. Anyway, it's been a great transition for me.
Well, Dane Aaron is your predecessor. I think maybe came over here just a couple of times in my first 5 or 6 years. And
mm-hmm.
So we actually have a meeting that we do with Mr. Pachorik on the forester side.
Oh, okay.
In this area. About once a month he comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually been incredibly informative about what
mm-hmm.
they're doing with the Big Pines campground
mm-hmm.
Near Onion Mountain. And... there's some locals that are organizing to try to make that more of a viable opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Just the direction of the Forest Service is to put that kind of a area in, and what would you call it? Just back to its natural state, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so many different issues that we have with the BLM and the Forest Service, not always bad or not bad at all. But we have the most complex, I guess, system of ownership in all. Western counties. We're jointly
mm-hmm.
working on a community wildfire protection plan
mm-hmm.
with the BLM right now. You're implementing the new resource
mm-hmm.
management plan. There's a number of things that would be really great if you would be interested on a regular basis of monthly or quarterly coming
absolutely
over for a visit.
Yes, I would be
you
happy
can ask
to.
Matthew, they're pretty painless. they're just a great opportunity for us to coordinate.
Sure.
Another issue that we won't need to discuss today, I know that's not why you came,
mm-hmm.
but the complexity of ownership also lends itself to where we have more acres as a county than any other county in the state. There's a couple of different opportunities where we have property that your agency has expressed interest in,
mm-hmm.
and you have properties that that the county
is interested in. Mm-hmm.
We've started a conversation with a lobbyist in D.C. to do that legislatively because
mm-hmm.
our process here can be, as Dane has explained to me, a little cumbersome, and I don't know if I'm young enough to see that process all the way through, although I'm not going to be here much longer. So it would really, maybe we agree that the legislative process is the most efficient way to do it, but it would be really great if we were on the same page with that, not asking Congress to do something that the agency wasn't endorsing locally. That would be really great. So tying to figuring out how those ownerships can kind of be managed a little bit more efficiently. The two examples that are paramount to me are Hog Creek Boat Ramp and Whitehorse. It's that joint ownership of one facility is really cumbersome for our administration. So I'm sure it's the same way for you, needing to get keys through Whitehorse to access your boat ramp and managing that during Boatnik. We could do that just fine if we had kind of that jurisdiction over that, or vice versa. So, yeah. Those would be the conversations we'd like to continue.
Okay.
The last one being, we had a gate project that we were working on with Alan Bolschweiler some years ago, and putting that one to kind of, I think it's probably at a resolve point with the agency, but there was a last step that Alan Bolschweiler was going to come kind of present the opportunity for people to go. Ideally, it was online. It was you know, the 100 gates or whatever that the BLM manages. So that people could know ahead of time, yes, there's a gate there. It's closed because of the spider, because of the cedar, root blot or whatever, light. That people would just kind of know ahead of time before they go up to a road why and that it's closed or open.
Well, and he's been, I did check in with him on that project after our last conversation. So the Grants Pass office has been working on getting the information, the data about the gates specifically correct. So we have kind of a, right now the project, the information is there, it's in a binder, and we are looking to get some personnel allocated towards georeferencing the data so that we can get it published.
Okay.
So any individual area that you do have a question or concern about, or the public has a question or concern about, we can certainly share that information. We have the information, we just don't have it live online in the map format that we would like yet.
Is that something other districts are doing, or are we going to be kind of a pioneer in this? I think it could be something that...
I think we're really pioneers in that standpoint. Something that's really unique about southwestern Oregon just is the checkerboarded land status pattern. And so I would venture to guess that the Medford district probably has more gates than most districts in the BLM. This is a very, western Oregon is extremely unique with the roads and access and reciprocal rights of way. And so it's really, really, in my observation, pretty unique.
Well, one of the things I think, and maybe this this area, I wandered in and out of these hills since I was a little kid. And I see a reason to lock a lot of roads off, and then I see a reason not to.
Right.
And it infuriates me because I'm used to wandering wherever I want to go, and I can't anymore.
Yep.
All the places that I used to go on the weekends, they're black off. That's it. You can't go there. But I understand it from the standpoint that if I got past that gate, I'm going to see trash. When Republic, and well, back then it was Iron Mountain or whatever the heck it was, when they started raising dump fees to where people couldn't go down there and dump for $4 or $5 or $6 for a pickup load, it went to $30 and $40, everybody headed for the hills just started throwing stuff off the side of the road. And that's a big issue. I've got a whole deal in my office of trash sites that are on Forest Service land and BLM land. So I don't blame you from that standpoint.
Well, and it's
it's not consistent. That you know, the reasoning is not consistent.
It's often, you know, many of the gates, I would venture to say, are a result of right-of-way agreements that we have our neighbors, and that is kind of what makes us very unique. I think the last district I came from, we had 2 million acres, and we had maybe 2 gates. That were locked. So it is, when I say it's different, it's quite a bit different, but
well, this is the most extreme 2 counties in all of Western, the Western United States.
Right.
Nobody has that complex system.
No, and, that, and that's, you know, I see the reasoning behind it.
Right.
But it is very frustrating.
It absolutely. Looking at another project that the Bureau is actually working on in Oregon is an overall public access map. And I recall some statistics, around 60 or 70% of the lands in this district were actually publicly accessible, which quite frankly, just surprised me. It's actually much more than some of the other districts with the land status patterns. So we do have a lot of actually public rights of way. So we'll have to, stuff that I haven't taken yet is to compare like some of those gates versus, is this really public access and are we limiting
something
there?
You guys are going through a transportation management plan, because the Forest Service just did.
Yes.
And that was really beneficial for me to be able to take a look at their whole portfolio and review roads they were looking to decommission and why, and roads they were looking to maintain. I think in the last one, it's funny how I can remember, it was 105 miles of roads that they were looking to improve. It was a very small number of roads that they were looking to permanently decommission and they were previously already closed.
Right.
It was really, so maybe that process over the next couple of years would be really...
Absolutely. We are, part of the Western Oregon RMP is actually that we would initiate travel management planning, which is, sometimes the public hears it and they think, oh, road closures is what we're working on. And in fact, it should be much more comprehensive as far as what the roads are there for and how can we manage them in a consistent manner, and how can we partner with the counties and other entities in doing so as far as those public access needs. Right now, we're just at the very beginning of the process. We did an internal workshop a couple of weeks ago, and again, because of our unique situation in Western Oregon with reciprocal rights of way, we're trying to make sure that we come up with a process that takes that into account and takes those access rights into account as we move forward. So there might be areas where we don't have legal access as the BLM, and so we can't really tell the public that this is a road, you know, that this is a road for their access. And so those are the questions we're trying to answer now.
And you mentioned needs, and my own personal thing, it isn't a need for me to go up there. I want to go up there.
Okay.
It's not a need. So in other words, when you say, you have no business being behind that gate. I said, my business is my recreation. I just like being in the mountains.
Yeah.
I like to go up on the weekends and stay by myself if you don't mind.
Right.
But I can't do that because it's blocked off.
Another,
so that's not a need. It's a
another
want.
Thing. Yeah. Well, sometimes
well, we see it as a need. Our mission, we see it as a need. But, yes, we want, I mean, that is part of our mission is
there's
to facilitate access.
There's a different designation with certain federal lands. So there's some that are designated as multiple use. The ONC Association would view ONC lands is dominant use. Recreation is not the primary use.
Right.
Forest management is the primary use. And when recreation gets in conflict with forest management, then there is a need under, you know, the public designation by Congress that that's what those lands were set aside. You didn't come here to talk about travel management. The last thing I wanted to say before we probably move on and talk about this another issue, because we have about a half an hour, is thank you for the... I wouldn't say an expedited process, but concluding the reciprocal right-of-way process with our forestry program. I know that we just signed that, and that is huge for our being able to manage in the future in a very, very tight partnership. And so I can't thank your agency enough for helping that.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. Well, I brought some... just kind of a hot sheet of significant projects that we have going on right now in our Grants Pass office. And
thank you. I'll probably send mine over to Claire.
Okay.
It's the official
version. So just some of the things we have going on for fiscal year 17, and our fiscal year runs October 1 through September 30th. So between now and the end of September, we anticipate offering approximately 23 million board feet of timber within the district. We're working with our state office to fully implement the Western Oregon RMP. Full implementation of that RMP would include 37 million board feet of timber off of the harvest land base, which is a lot of the kind of lower elevation checkerboarded lands, plus an additional 14 million board feet off of the reserves, which are kind of blocked up lands that would really be driven by projects purely from a forest forest health standpoint, whereas the harvest land base is more of a commercial standpoint, meeting both aspects of our mission there.
So this isn't a surprise to me, but this is a significant reduction.
Very low.
From what you were mandated under the previous RMP. At 80% was 38.5 million board feet. So.
So in the previous RMP, it was, I believe, 46 million board feet. So the new strategy for the new RMP increases really the harvest on the harvest land base, or matrix lands is kind of the equation of those lands, and then adds adds a component from what has been the 80% of the total land base that was put into reserves for forest health. Yeah,
so Judge Leon in 2013, I think, had a ruling of that the BLM would meet 80% of the ASQ of the 46.
Right.
So that was like 38.5 million.
Yes.
In these two districts.
How big is your
district?
I mean, is it, you know, when you say you're within the district, how big is that?
BLM-administered lands are about 875,000 acres. The total area is 3.1 million acres that, you know, the line around the district would be.
That is, so that's so Jackson, in Jackson and Josephine only?
Yeah, mostly. Much. It's a small portion of, very southern portion of Douglas County. And, yeah, we found out we have a little sliver of Coos County.
So we have about 360,000 acres, I think, in Josephine County of BLM.
Yes. So the timber harvest is calculated on the sustained yield unit, which is the entire district. The receipts that are allocated towards each county are actually based off of statewide timber harvest. So wherever timber is harvested throughout the state, the component, I believe Josephine County's 12.5% comes from those total receipts across the state. So we're also looking Western Oregon-wide as to, you know, how do we maximize our implementation of the RMP as a whole.
There was something brought up at County College, and maybe you can help me capture it. They were looking at implementing an allocation on where the tree originated. Mm-hmm. Where the stump is, that's who we're going to pay.
Right.
And if the stump doesn't in Josephine County, you're out.
There is, that formula exists with state land.
Okay.
State land is managed that way. So all the 8,000 acres, when a tree is cut here, that percentage comes back
comes
to us.
Back here.
But
so
there
go to Jackson
is
County.
No conversation, and there will never be a conversation about changing the allocation based on that.
On federal land.
On that. Mm-hmm. No, just
on
ONC.
Yeah.
Forest Service lands are distributed in, I think, that same way. It's 25% of the revenue generated locally.
Mm-hmm.
ONC is just a different animal.
It's just okay. It's its own.
And we're working at changing that split between, currently it's 50-50, established in 1953.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a one-sentence rider that has been introduced since then that would change that split now that we're on shared receipts, and it really doesn't affect you negatively at all, because they don't get those plowback funds.
Right.
25% goes directly back to the Treasury of allocating 75%. So that would mean about another $1.5 million, million to us, $1.2 million, if we were to have that rider removed. We would have generated last year $3.4 million. So $1 million would go a long way here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're looking, and just kind of statewide, recognizing our mission and our responsibilities as far as those receipts. What we're doing collectively is, if an individual district or office is struggling to meet volume in one area, we make efforts to make up for that difference in our other districts, so that the receipts are not affected.
When we were talking to Jamie at the state level, the idea that you put up, you offer for sale 23.
Yes.
Your objective is to hit that mark, knowing that some are going to likely be litigated.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have an equation of that percentage of likelihood So are you trying to achieve 23, or is your goal something else? Because I would suggest that
you... left over out of 23.
We are trying to achieve 23. And
so maybe offering 30 would get you to that point?
Well, ultimately, if we go into an appeal standpoint, we anticipate that we will eventually sell, like we will actually sell that timber and award it. Certainly things can be slowed down by the protest and appeal process, and I'm sure that is something that you have heard from the industry around here, and we're working furiously to get through it. Yeah. Yeah, and so for us, you know, we're working through our protests and appeals, and timber that we have offered and sold in the past, we will be awarding with contracts this year. And so those calculations, it's much more complex than I can explain today. I certainly could drill down into it probably in the future if you would like, but basically what we award and what is actually sold, or what we award versus what we offer, there's a lot of pluses and minuses. And so if we sell 23 million board feet or offer it and sell it, if that's not awarded in the future, then that difference, let's say we're 5 million board feet short, like 5 million gets into an appeal and it never gets out or we lose, that 5 million is actually subtracted against us in the future. And so it's not just about offering the timber, it's actually about awarding it.
So eventually you'd offer like 28 if you're down.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and then also if we have cruised something and we estimate it's at 23 million board feet and there's actually 26 out there, then we will acknowledge that we actually did award and sell 26 more million board feet. So there's a lot of calculations that go on further down the line.
The last thing I'd say on that offering is, and this isn't up to you, this is the adopted resource management plan, deviating from the historic level of board feet coming off of the BLM, and we have increased ours by 3 million board feet in the last couple of years. But the private sector purchasers that are really counting on this wood to be offered locally, not that they have a guarantee of receiving it, but there's fewer and fewer players with Rough and Ready no longer purchasing 25 million board feet a year. But at the same time, Swanson's looking to, you know, add another shift, and that requires another 25 million board feet. They're looking at this, and they used to get 38.5. Now there's, not that they would get it, now there's a little bit of a reduction in that, and that has an effect on the local industry and the number of jobs.
We expect this number to increase over time. That is what we are working towards to get to full implementation.
My concern is I hope we have somebody left when we decide to all of a sudden we're going to increase this over time. As you're saying, you know, we've lost Rough and Ready.
Right.
And now we're down to Gregory up north. And if their availability of timber goes down, there may be a line that's crossing. You know what? We're not doing this anymore.
Right.
And then we're looking at...
They're making it up in the private timber holdings, so those are being managed probably more aggressively than the private sector would ideally like, and they can only maintain that level on a sustained yield basis for a finite amount of time before the industry is going to have to adjust to the average output of the local regional forest. So,
well, I think it's adjusted quite dramatically in my lifetime.
Yeah.
From 40-something mills down to none, you know, that's a huge adjustment. And I get real skeptical and say, oh, well, we're going to eventually get it back. I don't know that you'll have any players. I think you will have discouraged the private sector so far that they would say, you know, we're not interested anymore.
One of the positive things on the national scale is what the administration's doing relative to the imported softwood, so from Canada, and that's going to improve things. There are only certain things that you're able to do here locally. And so I know that Jamie's working with all of the DMs on the appeal process, and that's something else of stability. So when Swanson purchases or they put in a bid, there needs to be some finite amount of time to where it's kind of gone through. And I think there has been, you have the most challenging district out of all of them in the entire state.
Congratulations.
And so as far as she's managing a west side forest with dry characteristics, and so it makes it really environmentally sensitive and challenging, but is best as you can move through your appeals process, get that stuff in the queue and before that process would be ideal.
Absolutely. And since we spoke last, we have been moving those through. We had, I believe, seven protests that were outstanding, or seven different projects that had been protested, and we have moved through the protest process on four of those. We're waiting to hear from the Interior Board of Land Appeals on those projects were appealed after we responded. So we're waiting to hear from Interior Board of Land Appeals, and we're hoping to hear something by the end of June. So we should be awarding some contracts, I believe, in the not-too-distant future, and we're just, Jamie is helping us to get out of our backlog.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's really been a big issue for
yes.
the local industry.
Absolutely. Sure. Absolutely. So the project that we have going on this year, kind of full bore, is we are working on what's called the Pickett West Forest Management Project Plan Environmental Assessment. And this is it's a landscape level forest management project, timber project, and also fuels management project. And we anticipate releasing the EA for public comment around May 30th. So one thing we would be happy to do, I don't know if the monthly meetings, if that is something you would like us to present
yeah.
to you. Okay. We absolutely can do that during the comment period, or any time really. But during the comment period, June 17th, we will be doing a field tour for the public so that they can see the units, hear our interpretation of what's going on, and kind of why those areas were selected.
What does EA stand for?
Environmental assessment.
Perfect.
Yes, you bet.
This is a stewardship contract?
No, this is a timber sale.
Oh.
Yes, it's part of the 23 million board feet.
Oh, okay.
So it's a critical...
Okay.
Critical piece of the puzzle there.
Do you have any idea how many acres and in what county is it located?
It's all, this is all in Josephine County, and total acreage. The overall watershed boundary of the project, kind of like our district, I want to say it's about 20,000 acres, but actual treatment would be on less than 2,000 acres.
Okay.
So it's, by the time we have identified the area that's ready for commercial harvest and identified those unit boundaries and all of the other kind of environmental concerns out there, it shrinks that acreage down quite a bit.
And that's off West Pickett Creek Road?
Yes.
Past Robert.
Well, I think one of us would be really interested in attending that
okay.
day 17th.
Excellent. I'll get you the details.
That'd be really great.
Okay. Wonderful. We would love to have you all. Hey, then in lands and realty, just some of the other projects that we have going on. We've got the Josephine County Crossing Plat EA. Let's see, we expect a decision this fall. And then we've got the Kobe Mount Baldy Communication Site Right-of-Way Amendment. So we're proposing expansion of our current communication site on Mount Baldy. To add additional equipment, and expect that sometime next spring. As far as I know, those projects are on kind of a, should be on schedule, so.
Great.
Yeah.
And there's a road, I'm assuming, coming off of the Clover Lawn area that goes all the way to the top of Baldy.
Yes.
Come up the back.
I'm not sure which side it comes up on there.
Because there's getting to be a lot of equipment up there. I'm assuming the road's
gotta be fairly good.
Gonna be
yeah.
a pretty nice road here eventually.
It's a pretty
probably.
Does the communication people pay for upgrading that road?
Yes. And this is another thing that is a bit unique with the, I'm not sure how this one relates to the, I imagine we have a holder reciprocal right of way. But whenever we have a land use applicant in for a communication site or transmission line, part of their right-of-way agreement in the long term, part of their grant includes access, and they actually pay a rental fee for access.
Like
and
a
get,
franchise fee per mile road.
Right. They get terms and conditions as far as their responsibilities for upgrade of the road.
Okay.
It can get a little complex when there's multiple owners
yeah.
or multiple holders, but anyway.
We make about $65,000, $70,000 a year off of our communication leases.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Okay. Just for fire and fuels management, I just wanted to mention that as you are likely aware, we have fire suppression contracted with the Oregon Department of Forestry, and that's all in place. We've been doing our preseason fire meetings, and the weather folks, the meteorologists, are still trying to figure out what kind of a fire season we might have, as to when it might dry out and temperatures increase for this year. But either way, we've been kind of going through the scenarios to make sure that we are ready. And then the next item I wanted to talk to you about is the Southwest Oregon Resource Advisory Council. So Commissioner Hare has attended several of our meetings.
Yeah.
You attended the fall meeting, which is actually where this is a 15-member board that is established by the selected by the Secretary of the Interior. The board recommended distribution of $413,000 to projects throughout Southwest Oregon. I have included in your list projects that were actually allocated towards Josephine County. And then I don't have the signed copy, but I do have a copy of the text of the letter that we sent to you all last fall regarding the allocation of Title II funds. Yeah. There are no, with Secure Rural Schools not passed this year, we don't have any additional Title II funds to allocate this year, but we are working on still getting contracts and agreements in place to distribute last year's. Yeah.
For this year.
Yes. So
last part here, working on contracts.
On contracts and agreements for these projects to make sure that to actually get the money transferred. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So this is a different group than the one that I went to for the Forest Service. That's a committee. This is a council. Councils have the authority established, I think, under FLTMA to actually advise the BLM on forest management practices. The committee over there at the Forest Service, just a small little committee council, that committee just appropriates Title II or makes a recommendation to appropriate Title II, which they have done. And so they're basically disbanded because there is no more Title II with the authorization expiring in 15. So you guys, this group will continue.
Yes.
Kelly Minty Morris is the commissioner on that, and she's the vice chair. At least she was last year.
Waters Creek. Fish habitat restoration.
Yes.
So up Waters Creek, we have a slide that took out part of the road up there and went in the creek.
Oh.
So, you know, I don't know whether it's, I think it's up, it might be a little farther up.
Okay. So
if it's upstream, it might not, you know, I'm just.
Yeah. On the, that's a great point. On the road slides, we have applied for emergency road funding to assist with those. I believe we have
about like 2 million got approved, I think, Merkley's office said. Not much.
No, we've been allocating our engineers are kind of putting together design plans to try to figure out how to get these roads repaired. But I believe we had about 10 slides this year with the extraordinary weather patterns that we've been having.
Well, Rob's working with somebody on it. I don't know who he's working with on it, but they're going to try to get it. Right now, fire trucks can't get by there. I drove over it and then looked back. I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't stop before the damage. Don't just, oh, let's drive across that. Because when I looked back, I went, I don't want to go back.
Yeah.
So it's pretty severe. And the
Chief
Hoke out in Illinois Valley says, I won't take a fire truck over. That's obvious.
Upstream. Gosh, it feels like I've been up there since.
Waters Creek.
Yeah.
Up about, I think it's.
But you have a Jeep that you just kind of
or
go.
Or the truck, yeah.
The road comes in and it's the fog line's gone and probably just much of the asphalt. When I was out there the other day, there's a road cone down in the creek and another big chunk of asphalt. You look back up underneath it, and you got to be against the
bank,
the cut bank, and they filled that in with shale, you know, with rock, so it still acts as a part of it. But you got to let it crowd down. I'd say I went across it, and then I thought, what an idiot!
How am I getting that?
You know better than to do that.
No. I've been talking about these woods since I was a kid.
It was bound to come back around.
Fish habitat restoration, and I would think sloughing off into the creek with asphalt stuff.
That would be an issue, yes.
Might have something to do with that, like if there's somebody that could get thrown that way.
Yeah. Usually the, well, the original project design likely included creating some kind of stream barriers to slow the water down a little bit and create some pools for to improve fish habitat. But, yes, yeah, certainly we'll be looking at our highest priorities.
And Water Creek feeds into, what's that creek going along the side of the freeway?
I don't know.
I just wonder if that's fish bearing. You know, that's the same question we had out.
The Applegate. Eventually.
Eventually, it's the Applegate, but it's a long ways away.
A couple miles.
Yeah.
I think there's another creek that it goes into along 199, and then it dumps into the Applegate.
Mm-hmm. So I just wondered if, I hate to put fish, spend a lot of money on fish habitat when there's no fish in the creek.
I'm certain that this one has fish in it, but yeah. Yes, generally we've been working on these projects with the watershed councils and different partnerships, and the idea is to focus attention on areas that we can make the most progress. So if there's not
buy-in from those agencies, they usually don't get funded.
Yeah, if there's not, and if there's not, there would have to be fish at least immediately adjacent that we want to kind of draw up into that creek, if nothing else. So
we've got about 10 minutes.
Okay. So the thing I wanted to also put a plug in for is that we are accepting applications. The Resource Advisory Council nomination process is going on, and so between now and the end of May, we are going to be filling, we're going to be taking applications. The secretary will be selecting representatives for the various different groups. So one member to represent energy and mineral development, the other four, their terms are still going on. Three members to represent nationally recognized environmental organizations, and one of five members who hold elected state office, hold county or local elected office, represent Indian tribes, and so on and so forth. So I would just ask the commission if anyone has interest or you know of folks that would be of interest in being part of the Resource Advisory Council. As Commissioner Hare stated, they write letters directly to the Secretary of the Interior to make recommendations, and we do seek their advice on a variety of issues. A minimum of twice a year. We do strive to meet quarterly, and generally the meetings will go for a couple of days. We'll try to do one day of field trips and discussion, maybe half a day of field trips and general issue discussion, and then depending on specific agenda items, Title II takes three quarters of a day to work through when we're looking at funding. Other issues, we would probably have a day-long meeting and get everyone home. We do cover per diem and travel for Resource Advisory Council members.
And this is just local? It's not, you're not going to Salem or Portland or anything?
As far as Roseburg or Lakeview. Okay. So the Resource Advisory Council covers portions of Douglas County, Jackson, Josephine counties, and so given our larger area, that's as far as we would go. Yeah, and we try to rotate it around so that the public can go to various meetings. A key part of it is to allow the public to voice their concerns as far as federal land management. And so in order to reach the public so they don't have to travel too far, we try to move the meetings around a bit.
So, is that something that you're going to be doing?
The appointment process can take number of years, at least as historically, as long as two. So I don't know how they, like if somebody's appointed and they can't fulfill their term, how does that filling of the slot happen? Is it the local RAC that does that?
No, I believe it's the secretary.
Still?
Yes.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yep.
Yep.
So it's not going for Kelly's position, it would be an additional.
Correct.
Are you interested?
There's three slots.
If it's out in the woods, I'm interested.
So there's...
This one is really, I think, as Title II expires, and we can talk about this more, it's going to be on management focus. And so that'll be really important. Ideally, we should have somebody on this because if anybody should, we have that joint ownership kind of partnership in a lot of situations. Nobody else really has that. So.
Yes, so Kelly's term goes through the end of July in 2018. So, yeah, this would be in addition to Kelly's term.
Great.
And I would put a plug in, too, for the first category of those who represent energy and mineral development. And also looking down at developed outdoor recreation and off-highway vehicle users, I really feel that... from looking at the makeup of the group, we could really use additional representation in the outdoor recreation industry. And would, if you have folks that you believe might be interested, we would love to see their application.
That's a growing challenge because people are going, they're just doing it, and we need to work lean into that for designated areas.
Right.
So when you're going through your travel management plan, that needs to be a priority because the private sector's feeling that pressure when we do a reforestation project. And people are using, you know, access in those areas, either on public or private reforestations. And it's a real issue.
Yes.
So.
Yes, it is. And so to have that input on our Resource Advisory Council would be a great, really help us to address those issues in the future.
Great.
So,
well, thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you.
Questions?
I really appreciate you taking the time.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for having me.
I kind of like the way that the BLM has turned the corner because it's tough in the off-highway vehicle users and stuff. Mm-hmm. I was an off-highway vehicle user for a number of years. Mm-hmm. And because there was no place at the table when we were asked everywhere we went, it was this.
Yeah.
The old Steve's Fork Trail up on top of Applegate up there that goes up to Lonesome Lake and Azalea Lake. We used to ride in there with our motorcycles all the time, and then we were kicked off by BLM.
Oh.
And it was just the horse riders that were going in. Well, springtime came, and the horse riders went in there and a bunch of stuff falling down. It says, we need to clean that up, and BLM says, no, that's always been taken care of by somebody else.
Right.
Well, it was the dirt bikers that would go in there with chainsaws and clean the trail out in the spring. So then it all of a sudden it went the whole circle and said, well, now I think we can share the trail. It's much the same as the river, and the rafters think they ought to have the river. Hell's Gate thinks they own the river.
Right.
Hardboat fishermen think they own the river. You know, the kayakers think they own the river. And it's got to be multiple use.
Yes.
And I think it took a while for BLM to get to that multiple use. You know, and now you've got trails up above Hammaker and whatnot. And that's just been fantastic.
That's great.
And it's a huge industry for Southern Oregon. It's not all hikers and bikers.
Right.
There's a whole new industry out there. With the side-by-sides and where families can go in that. And that's fantastic. You've turned that corner.
Okay. Thank you. Well, I'll keep that in mind. We've
got one. That's it. That's it for the day.
All right.
Well, thank you
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for coming over.
Good.
Feels as though we had other things to do. We did. We don't have the time to review the board's weekly calendar.
The only question I have is on Wednesday, phase 2. Which meetings
are
you going to attend other than budget?
This looks
like the only
Wednesday the 18th.
Yeah.
I'm on the wrong day,
Well, that sounds like just a question.
For May 18th.
Commissioner DeYoung.
No, it's Thursday, sorry.
So
City of MPO and Rogue Workforce Partnership and
General Discussion.
Rob Brandis is really strong in the MPO, so he's not.
You don't need to go.
That's what I mean. I don't think I need to go unless something really comes crashing down. I until they get their wheels on the ground, there's...
No, they're not appropriating any money right now.
There's no money to be talked about, so I can miss that MPO. As long as Rob's going to represent the county, I think we're okay.
Do we need to keep general discussion then?
I would like to.
Okay.
And then budget I'm good for.
Okay. And road workforce is a question on time.
Yes.
Okay. That looked like the only conflict.
I think we'll get through this week and then look to.
Where's Rogue Workforce going to be? Is that still a phone meeting?
It's always a phone meeting.
Okay. I'll try to get that one. She brought me.
We do have a land use hearing on Monday.
Yes. Yeah. Another thorny one.
We don't have the packets on those yet, and Dan and I are gone Friday.
You do have the packets.
They're here.
Oh, they are now?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
They were here yesterday.
Yeah, this one's going to be another adventure. There were people crying at the Planning Commission meeting, the applicants.
And that's Monday? This coming Monday?
It is.
I miss the people crying.
Good. You might get it on Monday.
I'll start the meeting with the idea that we're
no crying.
Recessing. No crying.
Crying at baseball.
I don't mind emotional feelings about it. That's just not here.
Yeah.
You can do it anywhere else, just not here.
Put the Kleenex box out on the front porch.
We do need, every time we schedule a land use hearing, we need to have a plan of when we can reconvene if necessary. So just make that a note, and I can tell Wendy. I don't want to convene without us knowing where we can continue this to automatically and predetermine, because this may not get done in that day, but we're not doing anything more that day. I'm not going to come back after the weekly business session. Nobody will be in it.
Yeah.
And our network is down to the point that I pulled up probably 15, 20 minutes ago Dan Simon's calendars, they're not coming up.
I know. The other day it happened to me. It wouldn't come up at all.
Yeah. So.
Do we need that general discussion on the 23rd? I'm not going to be here, so.
Actually, I think I've canceled it.
Okay. Great.
It says canceled on the board's calendar, and it's off of mine and Dan's now.
Cajo on the 30th?
Next week is going to be pretty.
Lily, might be your turn. He did his.
I already did my solo,
did
but I'll do it again.
On the what?
You've done a solo.
I did a solo last month.
For what?
Cajo, if we wanted. Why don't we all do the 30th? I don't mind.
Okay.
I would prefer that you
guys
have.
That's Tuesday after. That's the day after
the 30th. Yeah.
I can do that.
Yeah. We'll let's have the full board.
The solo did work out really well. How did yours work out?
Mine
worked out pretty good because it had a lot of phone interaction when there was just one of us for some reason.
I didn't have a lot of phone interaction, but I had a lot of good comment. I had people posting it on Facebook.
Yeah.
As far as. It wasn't a lot of levy talk. I tried to kind of go other places with.
But I think that'd be good. We'll do some solos. And then do a board.
Oh, Dan finally came up.
So who's doing the 30th?
We'll do the full board.
So you're reading the proclamation at 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
Awesome.
We're ready to adjourn if you are. At 9:48.
It is.
We are adjourned.